From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In a Utah public school, if you're a gay teenager and you're being bullied because of it, you cannot legally go to a teacher or a principal or a counselor and talk about it. It's because of the language in Utah law that prohibits, and here's the quote from the law, prohibits the advocacy of homosexuality. Critics of these laws say educators don't really know what that means, advocacy of homosexuality, so they stay away from the issue altogether. Late last week, the gay rights group Equality Utah filed a federal lawsuit trying to do away with these laws in Utah. Opponents say they limit free speech, they deny equal protection to LGBT students, and they stigmatize these kids. Supporters of the law say they're not singling out anyone, that teachers and students shouldn't be talking about sexual activity before marriage, no matter your orientation. So today in the program, we're talking about these laws and the legal challenge to them. Join us after the news.
Take Radio West wherever you go with KUER's mobile app for Android and iPhone. Public radio is always a swipe away with KUER's mobile app, free and available for download right now in your mobile phone's app store.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There's a phrase in the laws that govern curriculum in Utah public schools, and it says teachers and administrators and counselors cannot use materials or say things that represent the advocacy of homosexuality. That's the phrase, advocacy of homosexuality. Now, critics of a law like this say it lacks clarity, it's confusing, leaves educators unsure and uncertain about what they can or can't say about homosexuality, so they just don't say anything. And what that means is students, for example, who are being bullied don't have anyone to turn to at their school. But according to these critics, this isn't the only problem with laws like this. They're outdated, they say. They limit free speech, deny equal protection to LGBT students. Late last week, the group Equality Utah filed a lawsuit in Utah's U.S. District Court challenging what they're calling these anti-gay curriculum laws. So today in the program, we're going to be talking about the laws and the lawsuit. Joined first by Gail Ruzicka, who is a conservative political activist, a talk radio host, president of the Utah Eagle Forum. She, of course, is supportive of these curriculum laws, and she's joining us today by phone from her home in Highland, Utah. And Gail Ruzicka, welcome back to you. Thanks for being with us.
Always happy to be there, Doug.
So I'm going to get you to sort of respond in general to the lawsuit here in a second, but I kind of wanted to begin, if it's okay, with a scenario. Sort of the scenario that I was laying out or beginning to in the introduction, and that is, let's say you are a teenager, you're gay, and you're being bullied at school, and you and your parents go to this school and ask for support from teachers and the administration, you know, like, let's hold an assembly or let's talk about why bullying is wrong. They won't say anything about sex. They just want to say that bullying someone because they're gay or think they're gay is wrong. What's wrong with that?
Well, first of all, let's start by saying we should not have bullying in the schools. That's been an issue that has been talked about for years here. In fact, at the legislature, they have passed a couple of laws dealing with the bullying issue. And children get bullied for all kinds of reasons. They get bullied because maybe they're overweight, maybe they're underweight. They have pimples on their face, even sometimes the color of their skin. It's sad to say, but children get bullied. They get bullied at school. They get bullied online. Sometimes a child that you'd look at that you'd think wouldn't have a problem in the world. Maybe it's a girl. She's the cheerleader, and she looks beautiful, and everything looks perfect, and she's getting bullied for whatever reason. People are bullying her, sending her nasty emails, or making fun of her. Bullying has been around for as long as I can remember, from when I was in school. And I'll tell you what, I'm old, so that was a long time ago. And
but Gail, there's a difference. School officials, counselors, and administrators can hold an assembly to say, you cannot judge people and should not bully people because they have acne or because they're overweight. They can address it. They can deal with it. In the case where a young person is gay, you can't do that. That's, I think, what the difference is.
Well, what I was saying about the fact that they have, if they were to have an assembly, I don't think they should have an assembly to say you can't bully somebody because they have pimples on their face. You have an assembly to talk about bullying, all about bullying, about treating people unkindly, about making fun of people. There's so many reasons they do it. You can't have an assembly for every reason they do it. You deal with the problem of you do not mistreat people. It doesn't matter what the reasons are that they choose to mistreat a person.
I get that, but I get that. But what's wrong with saying some of these cases are because they're gay? What's wrong with saying that?
Well, it would totally depend on the context in which they say it. Remember, that word is advocate. And they have taken this word advocate and suddenly say it means everything. And it doesn't mean everything. It means exactly what it says. The word is advocate. They cannot inhale. And by the way, remember, this is in the sex education laws. This is in the health section, sex education laws. And it's saying that the teachers cannot advocate for homosexuality. They're not just suing about that. They're suing, for instance, it also says that they must teach that the best practice is abstinence before marriage and fidelity after marriage. And they're suing saying that that's discriminatory. That's for all students. So it's talking about best practice. And the reason you have language in the classroom, you know, all children go through times in their life when they're questioning who they are. Mm-hmm. And doesn't mean because they're questioning that's who they are. You would be hard-pressed to find people who didn't say at some point in their life they were didn't have questions about who they are. And as time goes on and we live in such a sexual society, more and more they're questioning their sexuality. That is not a discussion for the classroom. A child shouldn't raise their hand and saying, "Oh, I'm having these concerns and I'm questioning," and the teacher be the one to answer the questions. The child should go to the counselor and talk in privacy or talk to their parents. As you pointed out, you know, the parents come to the school with the child with their problem. There are things that are appropriate in the school to talk about, to have assemblies about. There are things that are not, and there are appropriate ways to do it. And they want to change everything. They want to change our sex education laws, which are some of the most successful in the nation, and they are saying that it is discriminatory to teach children to practice abstinence, that if you teach that particular part of the law, that you're discriminating against homosexual children. Now, how is that possible? I don't care whether a child identifies, however they self-identify as homosexual, heterosexual, or transgender, whatever they identify at, you don't want to encourage them to be having sex.
Okay.
And to encourage them not to have sex is not discriminatory.
Okay. So let me set aside the question of people having sex for just a moment. Do you acknowledge, you're a member of the LDS Church, do you acknowledge, as does your church now, that people are born gay?
Well, I don't think that anybody's acknowledging that they're born gay without scientific evidence, and there's not any scientific evidence. So I'm not going to make a commitment one way or the other on that by saying, you know, oh, yeah, well, my church identifies, says that's the case, and I say that's the case, because, no, there's no scientific evidence, and that's what you're looking for, is scientific evidence.
Gail, now, can I just quote something? This is from Elder M. Russell Ballard of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles. He says, "The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints believes the experience of same-sex attraction is a complex reality for many people. The attraction itself is not a sin, but acting on it is." Are you in agreement with Elder Ballard on that point?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So you acknowledge that it is a reality for some, that some people are gay.
That's how they self-identify. I'm using the language that's being used out there as acceptable language, that people have ways that they self-identify, and if that is where they are in their life and that's how they self-identify, I'm not going to question their thinking and their choices. But my concern is that the classroom is not the way to promote it.
Why couldn't someone in a public school in this state say the word gay Why couldn't they, you know, forget the sex part, just acknowledge that there are young people who are gay, who are being bullied? What is wrong with that?
Well, again, I you know, you asked me that before, and I said, is there, of course you acknowledge people when people are being bullied, and you make sure that this practice of bullying stops in the schools. And I'm just saying it doesn't. There's for all kinds of reasons. And why are we singling out one reason when there's lots of reasons, multiple reasons? And I'm sure there are some, like children who are overweight, that there's a larger group of them that would fall in that category. So, but we don't single them out. I think singling them out for the reasons that they're being bullied could in fact make it worse.
Okay.
And so that, I just don't see that is the issue here. The issue has to do with advocating. And we've got to remember to stick with that particular word, because that's all it says in the law.
Right.
It says is advocate.
Right. What does that mean? Advocating homosexuality.
Well, if you advocate for something, then you are promoting it. You are encouraging
because, sex, you know, or encouraging the fact that there are gay people. I mean, this is what I'm saying. This is the difference, it seems. On one hand, you could say homosexuality is an orientation whereby people have sex. But homosexuality is also just an orientation, as heterosexuality is. So what does that mean, advocate homosexuality?
Well, homosexuality describes the kind of sex that somebody...
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. Homosexuality is an orientation. It doesn't just mean people are having sex. It means people are attracted. That's what I'm saying. And this seems like why critics are confused about the term advocating homosexuality. It seems to lack a kind of clarity.
If you look back on what you're talking about, the word advocate...
Yeah.
You're dealing with young people who are already struggling with their identity in many, many areas in their life. And at that point is not the time in a classroom to start having that discussion and advocate to those children that, you might be one way or the other, and it's just fine.
Can a counselor talk to them outside of a classroom you think that's okay?
If a child went to a counselor and said to this counselor, you know, I'm being bullied, this is what they're doing to me, of course that counselor can have that discussion
about them being
with
gay
that child. Well, about the fact that they're being bullied.
About them being gay. That's what I asked, though. Not just about generally being bullied, that they are homosexual and they're being bullied because they're gay.
Yeah, the child can talk about it. The child can tell the counselor what's going on in their life and talk about it. But it's not up to the counselor unless the counselor gets permission from the parent. That's what's so important about this, is signed parental permission from the parent. And so if a child goes to a counselor, the counselor should always listen to the child. But the counselor should not advocate to the child anything that they haven't discussed with the child's parent. Because these are children. We're not talking about adults. This would be a different discussion if we were talking about adults. But we're talking about children in the classroom, in the schools, dealing with problems that children deal with. And many times, especially the teachers, are not even equipped to have this discussion and should not be having that discussion. And it is in the lawsuit themselves where they're making the issue of sexual practice. They're saying to teach homosexual children not to have sex is discriminating against them.
Yeah.
Now, they're the ones that are apparently saying then that the children are having sex, and if you try to talk them out of it, you're discriminating against homosexual children. Something like, well, they'll be having sex because they're homosexual. It's okay to have that conversation with heterosexual children, but not with homosexual children. They're trying to change our sex education laws in the state. You know, the state of Utah has tremendous success with their sex education laws.
How do you define success? I guess teen pregnancy and STDs, that would be the way you define it. So you're saying that you can actually measure success in those terms?
Well, in many ways, of course, absolutely.
Well, you said success, so I wanted you to be specific. What do you mean by success?
Okay. I'm talking about abortion rates, pregnancy rates, just teens having sex. We're talking about STDs. All of those things add up, but also at the same time, it's more than just STDs. It's their emotions and heartbreaks. I can't imagine that there's a parent or anybody anywhere that doesn't think it's better for children, all children in the schools, all children that age, not to have sex. Is anybody advocating for them to have sex? Why would they say, we don't want you to teach anymore that you should practice abstinence before marriage?
I think there's an argument, and I won't speak for these people, but I think there's an argument that the more candid you are and open and transparent about the reality of sex, the less you will have things like abortions and teen pregnancies and STDs and emotional insecurity.
The data doesn't show that. The states that teach comprehensive sex education, that teach all those things, are the ones that have the high pregnancy rates and the high STD rates.
I think there might be some dispute about that. Let me move on to something I wanted to ask you. The law continues
There's documentation.
Okay.
We'll
check that. You're right, and we should check that out. The law continues to make reference to unconstitutional marriage laws. Just on that basis, don't you think these laws need to be updated?
Updated by what? How would you update them?
The High Court has now ruled that same-sex marriage is legal. There's a reference in the state constitution and in these so-called anti-gay curriculum laws that refer to marriage only being legal between a man and a woman. Shouldn't they be updated?
In Utah, we have a constitutional amendment that says that,
yeah.
and that has not been changed. We in Utah have not changed our constitution, and we have no intentions of changing our constitution. A constitutional ruling can be changed at any time. All you do is change the court. It doesn't mean any states has to go through and change all their laws and everything in the code and everything in the constitution to accommodate that. That is a ruling from a court. It's not the laws that are passed. And states have a right to pass laws. And those are the laws on our books. And as a state, we've chosen to keep those laws on our books.
Wait. Are you saying the state has a law to pass, has a right to pass laws, even though laws have been declared by the U.S. Supreme Court unconstitutional?
Well, we in our state passed a constitutional amendment. Our constitution describes marriage as the legal union between a man and a woman.
Yeah.
And we have a right to do that. And multiple states have kept those laws in place because it's a ruling from the court. Nobody passed a law. It's a ruling from the court, and that can be changed at any time. And so you can't just keep changing your laws back.
Okay, I don't want to stray too far off the issue. Let me ask you this finally.
Okay.
Do you have a sense? Have you talked to lawmakers? Do you know what and maybe state school board members, those kinds of things? Is there any talk about any attempt at fixing these kinds of laws or dealing with the lawsuit in any way? Do you know how that's proceeding? What the sort of reaction has been? Can you say anything about that?
There have been attempts. Even before, when we just had the federal ruling, there was attempts, and there have been attempts since then, but they didn't go anywhere because there was just a handful of lawmakers who suggested that we go back and make those changes, and each time they usually don't even make it out of committee, or if they do make it out of committee onto the floor, they don't go any further than that. So the attempts have been made there, but the Utah lawmakers have made that decision that they're not going to make those changes. We don't defy that ruling in our what's going on. They're out there selling those marriage licenses, just as the courts have said, but they're not going to change the laws to abide by that. They'll leave the laws in place in hopes that the time will come when the courts will rule, reverse that ruling.
It's Gail Ruzicka, conservative political activist, president of the Utah Eagle Forum, joined us from her home in Highland, Utah. Gail, good to hear from you again. Thanks very much.
Always good to talk to you, Doug. Bye now.
Bye now. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. Thank you. Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about these Utah laws that prohibit teachers and students in the state from having discussions about homosexuality in public schools. Late last week, the gay rights group Equality Utah filed a federal lawsuit against the state's Board of Education. It's the first lawsuit of its kind in this country. Opponents of these laws say they limit free speech and deny equal protection. And besides all of that, they stigmatize students, do emotional harm. Earlier on the program, we had Gail Ruzica. She's a proponent of these kinds of laws. Joining us now is Cliff Roski. He's a professor at the University of Utah's S.J. Quinney College of Law and is on the advisory board of Equality Utah. His research provided the foundation for Equality Utah's lawsuit against the school board. And Professor Roski, welcome back to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
And Troy Williams is with us, the executive director of Equality Utah. And Troy, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I guess I wanted to begin with, could you both explain to me how it does work? I proposed a scenario to Gail Ruzica that if you are you're in eighth grade and you're gay and you're getting the crap beat out of you every day because of it, what can you and can you not do? Who can you and cannot turn to in a public school to attend to all of this? How does it work as the law lays out right now?
I think the real answer is that no one knows. The law is unclear. No one knows what advocate means. No one knows what homosexuality means. You had a lively debate with Gail Ruzica about those two terms. But we do know, and it's laid out in the complaint, that some schools have said that when a kid is getting bullied because they're gay or they're gender nonconforming, the quote from, I believe, a guidance counselor to the parents was, "We can't tell this first grade class, your son's classmates, we can't tell them that it's okay for your son to wear a dress, and we can't tell them that it's okay to be gay. We're not allowed to do that because there's a law against it." And so, that's your scenario, and that's not a hypothetical scenario. That happened.
Can you use the word gay?
In some cases, students are told not to use the word gay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I've heard that you can't even use the term.
There was a school board member of a school board that when a student wanted to form a gay-straight alliance, a student club to support LGBT students, the school board member said, well, maybe you shouldn't use the word gay in the name of the club, or you shouldn't put the word gay up on your posters for the organization.
What kind of I mean, there are three particular scenarios or three particular cases. James Doe and John Doe and Jane Doe. Troy, maybe talk us through some of the cases
yeah.
here, because you're using very particular
right.
stories.
For example, and just to clarify, because Gail was speaking that this only applied to health classes or sex education classes, but actually the shadow of what we call no promo homo is cast over all subject matters.
And it's not just a shadow. The law explicitly applies to any course or class and all student right. clubs. That's in the text of the law. So that's just wrong.
So Gail was saying that it's just in sex ed classes.
That is factually wrong. If you read the law, it says any course or class and right. all student clubs.
So, for example, one of our plaintiffs was assigned to do a family history project in his English class. And so he wanted to write about his gay uncles getting legally married after Obergefell. And they had to give oral reports to the class. The teacher took him aside and said, "You cannot present your paper in front of the class. If you do this report, you'll have to come give the oral report to me privately after school." Clearly a violation of this student's free speech and clearly stigmatizes this young student who also happens to be gay. What kind of message does this send to this young person that he can't speak about a family member who gets married?
Well, Cliff Roski, you were quoted in the paper in the Tribune as saying that a teacher couldn't even talk about this particular case in a social studies class.
It's not clear what the teacher's expected to do if a student, you know, cuts out a paper, the article from the newspaper about this case, and wants to make a presentation for current events in social studies. If there's any discussion about that, is that the advocacy of homosexuality that's being taught?
prohibits the use of educational material that includes advocacy of homosexuality, requires teaching abstinence before marriage, and prohibits the advocacy of sexual activity outside of marriage. Now, this was a point that Gail Ruzicka was talking about before, that, look, it doesn't matter if they're gay or not. And this gets to obviously a bigger question, when we could spend 2 hours on whether or not there should be more transparent sex education in Utah's public schools. But how does talking about abstinence before marriage apply, and how is it discriminatory?
And this was a basic misunderstanding, another one, in Gail Ruzicka's segment. This lawsuit does not challenge abstinence education at all. The problem with the phrase abstinence until marriage is that the word marriage under Utah law explicitly still excludes two people of the same sex. When you tell an LGBT or particularly lesbian, gay, or bisexual child that they have to be abstinent until marriage, and you also define marriage to exclude them, you're saying that they have to be abstinent for their entire lives, that they can never engage in sexual activity, even inside of marriage. That definition of marriage has been declared unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court, but it remains in Utah law. So that it's not about the abstinence, it's about the marriage.
Yeah. Why does it remain in Utah law?
Well, that's a great question. And there were certainly efforts to bring state law up to up to code, I guess. And those didn't go anywhere. In big part because of Gail Ruzicka's lobbying up this past legislative session. She wants to make a moral stand that the court's decision should not overrule the will of the people. And so you see that kind of manifest in Representative LeVar Christensen pushing forward what he called his sovereign marriage authority that would give the state supremacy over the courts.
I want to hear a little bit more about that, actually, because what one of the things that you've written about is that these anti-gay laws, like is this a kind of an end run that you're seeing states make?
Yeah, for years, states really just discriminated against LGBT people in every way they possibly could. They criminalized same-sex behavior or same-sex relationships. They excluded same-sex couples from marriage, and in these curriculum laws, in these student club laws. Now that sodomy laws are unconstitutional, same-sex marriage bans are unconstitutional, now we're left with these laws, and they have to be justified on their own terms. You can't say, we're not going to advocate criminal conduct, or we're not going to advocate sex outside of marriage. Gail's still trying to say that, but it's actually just misunderstanding what the case is about. The lawsuit doesn't challenge a rule that says we're not going to teach sexual activity outside of marriage. It just wants to make sure that LGBT people are included in marriage and that students understand that. We literally have a case where a teacher begins health class by reading this rule. A student raises his hand and says, are we going to talk about same-sex marriage? And the teacher says, no.
Where did this come from? Maybe you should backtrack a little bit and talk about 1996, because it seems like this was one of the beginnings anyway. I mean, obviously there are probably a lot of origins to these so-called anti-gay curriculum laws, but 1996 seemed like kind of an important time. You guys want to set this up for us as just sort of a history of what happened?
Yeah. So these so-called no promo homo laws, the origin is in 1996, and they're a reaction to the audacity of young high school students wanting to form gay straight alliances. And you remember the big East High controversy and for a while the state banned all extracurricular clubs just to make sure that kids weren't going to these GSA. And so that this is a reaction to. And so when you go back and you start to read newspaper articles from the day, or even listen to testimony, you'll hear this great fear that folks have that homosexuality will be sort of invade the schools, that will start recruiting children. Gail Ruzicka in 1996, she had a lot of political influence at that point, and she would just kind of parrot the kind of lines that we'd heard from folks like Anita Hill. She would say things, and she's quoted in the New York Times article saying, you know, homosexuals can't reproduce, therefore they must recruit. And that is the impetus. And so she stokes up this fear of these predator gays that are out there coming for the children, right? And she stoked this fear amongst the legislators, and the result were these laws.
So, so you've got this setting for all of this, but then things start to change. I mean, case law starts to evolve. I mean, Cliff Roske, sodomy was still on the book. Well, I guess it's still on the books. It may be in some places, but there was this Supreme Court case. I can't remember the
Lawrence.
Date. Lawrence v.
Texas.
That I guess the state had to adapt in some ways, and that does bring us the language that we have now, correct? Would you
explain
that through?
That's right. So in 1996, when sodomy laws were still thought to be constitutional, laws that banned same-sex couples from engaging in intimate behavior, forming relationships, those were not just on the books but enforced and enforceable. At that point, when they wrote the 1996 law, they said teachers cannot do anything to, quote, encourage or support criminal conduct,
yeah.
Right? And it was quite the sponsor of the bill.
But I guess that was legally true at that time. Homosexuality was criminal conduct.
Exactly, right. And so this is just like telling kids not to do drugs,
yeah.
Right? But the sponsor of the bill was quite clear. He said, when I say criminal conduct, I'm referring to homosexuality. I want to keep, he said, avowed homosexuals out of our schools.
This was Senator Chris Butters, is that right?
I think it was Taylor.
Right? Taylor? Okay.
Oh, Taylor. Craig Taylor, yeah. Forgive me. Yeah.
But then it became clear that sodomy laws would be declared unconstitutional around 2000, that the Lawrence case began, and that's when they had to the word criminal conduct, that wouldn't be good enough, so they had to add explicitly the advocacy of homosexuality, and that happens in around 2000 or 2001.
And that's where we get the advocacy
right
issue?
And it's all about sort of trying to maintain the goal of discriminating against gay people as a group. First, they were using the criminal law to achieve that goal. When that wasn't available, they just had to say it. You can't advocate homosexuality. What does that mean? You can't talk about the fact that people are gay and that that's okay.
But has clearly sort of societal attitudes about all of this, even in a conservative place like Utah, they are changing in some ways. But I guess the question is, are these laws sort of holding back these kinds of discussions that could be taking place in schools where the LDS churches I was mentioning before, which has obviously a lot of influence on state lawmakers and policymakers in the state, has already said, homosexuality is a reality. Now, whether you act on it, that's still a sort of moral principle. But there was a video that the LDS Church launched yesterday where they're trying to speak sensitively to these questions that young gay people and gay people in general may have. Don't be judged, all those kinds of things. I mean, it seems like there's such a contrast in sort of societal attitudes and laws like this that allow people to have these kinds of conversations. I'm not sure if that's a question, but
I think we are definitely in a transition phase, and you know, state governments, churches, schools are all trying to process this seismic shift in our culture. And for us, you know, fundamentally what we are concerned about is the stigma that young LGBTQ identified students are experiencing. We have been concerned and alarmed as we've looked and seen this rise in young people taking their lives. There was this headline in the Salt Lake Tribune just a couple months ago that said, state officials unsure why youth suicide rates have nearly tripled since 2007. The state's unsure why this is happening. But there is no mystery to us why LGBT students take their lives. We know We know the national data. When young people are stigmatized, when they fear that they're going to be kicked out of their home, when they know they're going to be exiled from their faith, when their public school teachers cannot affirm their lives, when they are the targets of lawsuits from Governor Herbert targeting their right to use a bathroom where they are safe, when they are bullied in schools, all of these things exile young people. They experience loneliness, isolation, fear, and those risk factors escalate. We know that LGBT students who are kicked out of their homes and their communities are 8 times more likely to engage in high-risk behaviors and to experience suicide ideation than their straight counterparts. We know. So we have to combat stigma wherever we can find it.
I want to ask you, what kind of maybe specific changes you're hoping that will come from a lawsuit like this? But let's take a break first and come back. Troy Williams, Executive Director of Equality Utah, is joining us. Cliff Roske, a professor at the S.J. Quinney College of Law at the University of Utah, on the Advisory Board of Equality Utah. We'll take a break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio Westenberg Fabrizio. Late last week, the LGBT activist group Equality Utah filed a lawsuit against the State Board of Education and others over what it calls these anti-gay school laws. The laws they're talking about prohibit the quote-unquote advocacy of homosexuality. But opponents say that limits free speech, it denies equal protection to LGBT students, and it puts them in harm's way as well. So that's what we're talking about, the laws and the lawsuit. Cliff Roske is with us, a professor at the S.J. Quinney College of Law. He's on the advisory board of Equality Utah, and Troy Williams is the executive director of Equality Utah. Earlier on the program, we heard from conservative political activist Gail Ruzicka. How widespread are laws like this? Utah has these laws. Where else are we seeing them?
Well, Utah's law is unusual in some respects. It's one of the sort of broadest prohibitions on any discussion of LGBT people or same-sex relationships. And most people say that there are 7 other states that have laws that are roughly like Utah's in the sort of extremity of their anti-gay provisions. And then there are other states that have some things that are similar, like a preference for talking about heterosexual relationships or limiting discussion to abstinence until marriage and still defining marriage to exclude same-sex couples. So it sort of depends on which feature of the law you're talking about. But Utah has, I believe, the only statewide policy that explicitly applies to any course or class and all student clubs. That's an extraordinarily broad statewide sort of form of discrimination against LGBT people.
It gets to a point that Gail Ruzicka was making that, like, what she was saying is, look, if it's inappropriate, if you raise your hand in a classroom, you shouldn't, a teacher should not be able to talk about your issues with your sexuality. But you can go to a guidance counselor and have these conversations privately. That's what she said. These conversations can be had. Cliff Roske, is that true?
I don't think it is. I just yesterday spoke with someone who was trained and certified as a guidance counselor in Utah, and he told me that during the class, when this subject came up, the instruction from people who were currently serving as guidance counselors in Utah, certified by the State Board of Education, is that if a student discloses their sexual identity to you, that it is not acceptable to say it's okay that you're gay, or to provide them support or a referral or something like that, that would violate the rule against advocating homosexuality.
So what do you say? What do you say?
I'm not sure what they're supposed to say. I think, you know, it would be very difficult to be a guidance counselor in that situation, because almost anything that you say, your ethical obligation to tell the student the truth, that this is a normal variation of human sexuality, there's nothing wrong with it. That's your ethical obligation, but the law prohibits you from taking that step.
It's interesting. There's another story. There are 3 basic stories that you sort of build the case against these laws. One of them is for so-called Jane Doe. She's this lesbian girl in a Salt Lake County school, Jordan School District, I think it is. Mm-hmm. She's disciplined for holding another girl's hand in school. Right. How does this play into the case?
Yeah, this student was taken in by their principal and was disciplined for public displays of affection, simply holding hands with a girlfriend, while her other straight students, holding hands, kissing, etc., no discipline whatsoever. And it really articulates how queer-identified students are being treated differently than straight-identified students.
So is this an equal protection thing? Is that where that...
Absolutely. It's both equal protection and the act of holding hands is expressive in and of itself. And if you silence the expression of one group of students and not another, that's both a restriction on their expression and their... It's obviously a denial of equal protection. You can't... The school in writing had a policy that no one could hold hands, but they never enforced it against heterosexual couples. So it's really selective enforcement with a goal towards suppressing same-sex relationships.
Why did it take so long to... Why did it take so long for you to challenge something like this?
Well, we were busy last year passing the state's first statewide non-discrimination law,
which you had stuff to do,
which we were able to achieve.
But I do wonder, why hasn't something like this come up before?
The answer is very simple. As long as sodomy laws and same-sex marriage bans could be enforced, these laws could be justified on other grounds. We're not going to teach children we're not going to encourage children to engage in criminal conduct. We're not going to encourage sexual activity outside of marriage. But now that those laws are unconstitutional and can't be enforced, now we have very squarely presented with this question of, can we talk about LGBT people? Acknowledge the existence of those people and the same-sex relationships? And now the people who passed these laws and support them, they can't use the criminal law or the marriage laws as a kind of excuse for discrimination. They have to justify the discrimination on its own terms, and they just can't do that. As we heard earlier, Gail attempted to fall back on the marriage issue, but that's not the issue in this case.
It seems like Utah seems unique in that sense. So is it if you're trying to sort of create a test case, is Utah sort of an ideal scenario to do that?
Honestly, what happened is...
And is that what you're trying to do?
No. Okay. Right. Equality Utah put out a survey of its members asking people to report the impact of these laws, and we were overwhelmed with responses of terrible stories. I mean, there are all three of these plaintiffs were beaten. One of them was even burned by a bully, and the school explicitly said, "We can't protect your son, homeschool him." When you hear stories like that, this, never mind a test case, you just have to stop the harm. You have to protect the kids immediately.
And in an ideal situation, it would be wonderful to be able to go to the legislature with these students and a piece of legislation striking these laws. It took us 7 years to pass our statewide non-discrimination law, and we simply can't afford another 7 years to make our case to the legislature. When we see young people taking their lives, when we see that young kids are being exiled in so many ways, we have to act fast and we have to act now.
And the other thing, of course, is when you bring a minor, a child, to the legislature, then they're in the public eye. And in the lawsuit, they can remain anonymous. And that's really important because in these cases, as soon as someone's identified as filing a lawsuit, that can be used against them by bullies. And that's happened in the past.
So how would you change the laws? And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, you know, this question that Gail Zeke and others talk about, and they're uneasy about this idea of talking about sex. When it doesn't sound like this is really about that. This sounds like this is not about sex education laws. Maybe that's something you guys care about, but you're not dealing with that right now.
Right.
Is that right? Would you talk about that?
Yeah, the change is quite simple, and it's laid out at the end of the complaint. Strike all the discriminatory provisions, so the words advocacy of homosexuality, out of the law. there's still going to be a part of the law that says you can't talk about the intricacies of sexual intercourse. You can't talk about sexual activity outside of marriage. Those have not been challenged. We just have to clarify that when we say marriage, that term includes a marriage between two people of the same sex. So abstinence until marriage is still – I think Utah is known as an abstinence plus state. So you can talk about abstinence and contraceptives in certain circumstances. That doesn't change a bit. So it's just simply get all the discrimination out of the law and leave the law otherwise just as it is.
Troy, you've spent a lot of time sort of doing legwork for these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You spent a lot of time with leaders of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to get this anti-discrimination law passed. Mm-hmm. You can approach the Mormon Church on this?
You know, we always will have an open dialogue with the church, and, you know, we would love, anything that again, stigmatizes young people, or any group that stigmatizes young people, whether it's a legislature or a church or a school, we want to enter into constructive dialogue with them. We have to. There is no other recourse but to enter into those conversations, and we will continue to do so.
It's interesting. Cliff Roski, one of the things that you've written about is this paper I'm looking at that you wrote, where you kind of explored the fact that these anti-gay curriculum laws persist, why they're rarely challenged in court, why they're rarely addressed by legal scholars. Why is that?
It's a recent phenomenon that marriage bans against same-sex couples.
So that changed everything.
It changed everything, absolutely, because otherwise – if you were to challenge this law when same-sex marriage was banned in Utah, they would say you're really challenging abstinence until marriage. And if you want to get married, well, that's your own – you file a lawsuit and see how that goes. Now that lawsuit is concluded and same-sex couples have the right to marry, both not only in Utah but in all 50 states, now you can have a conversation about these laws specifically.
But can you, if there's still a provision on the state constitution that declares marriage only between a man and a woman, don't you have to get rid of that or try to deal with that, or do you?
Well, a federal court can say that cannot be enforced in the context of Utah public schools, just like it can't be enforced at the county clerk's office where they're handing out marriage licenses. You would need a federal court order to overrule that, you know, that particular impact of Amendment 3.
I wanted to, Troy Williams, come back to this idea of this so-called gay agenda, because that was the thing that you heard a lot of, that gay people were recruiting young people.
Right, right. I know that because, you know, as you know, some may know, Gail Ruzicka was really my political mentor back in the early 90s. I was so afraid of being gay that I
ran. Did you tell her you were gay?
No, I wasn't even accepting the fact that I was gay. I thought that if I was super righteous and worked really hard against these evils, that I would overcome this these inclinations. I have this vivid memory of sitting in Gail's house with this piece of propaganda literature just describing homosexuals as the most monstrous predators, and on some deep level believing that this was who I was. So I was going to do everything I could to sort of, you know, exorcise these demons from my soul. Thankfully, you know, God didn't answer my prayers, and I was able to sort of, you know, embrace who I am. You know, the gay agenda, what is it? It's full civil equality in all areas governed by civil law. Right? That's what this is about. But it's also combating stigma so that young people who feel isolated, who feel alone, know that there's a tribe that they can belong to. That's what this ultimately is about, to send a message to young people that you belong. There's a home for you. And that if Equality Utah can, you know, work with schools and work with the legislature to create a safe space for young people, so that they can live happy, fulfilled lives. And yes, I want to send a message to every kid out there that you can be gay or you can be transgender and you can live a happy, healthy, fulfilled life.
What do you think? Are we in a different place? Maybe I asked this question earlier, but I want to come back to this question of, again, the powerful influence of the Church of Jesus mm-hmm. Christ of Latter-day Saints and all of this. The video that they launched yesterday on their website. Are we in a different place? Are Utah lawmakers who clearly must be influenced by their church in a sort of vast majority of them are LDS. Do you think that this could there could be some shifting perceptions that could influence lawmakers and policymakers to be more amenable to something like this?
We're seeing this shift happen every single day. I mean, as people come out and live their lives, as we have mayors who are elected who are gay or council members who are elected, and we just really take our place in the public sphere, a lot of the fears and all of the fear-mongering and the stereotypes that Gail Ruzicka really promoted in the 90s, we see them as these caricatures that aren't real and aren't true. And I think a lot of the stereotypes are dissolving and falling away. And that's a good sign. It's a really great thing. And so now we're in a space where the LGBTQ community can step up and say, hey, we're here to serve. We're here to give back. We're here to participate in public life. And yeah, things are changing, and it's changing for the better.
Cliff Roski, you say in your article you think that the anti-gay curriculum laws are not likely to persist much longer because you have these, it seems like, these pillars that have fallen away. One is the legal things that have fallen away. Now same-sex marriage is legal. Sodomy laws no longer exist. So you've got the legal component. But then this seems like a cultural sort of social component. Do you think that's influencing all of this, I guess, is the question?
Oh, I think there's no question. Absolutely. I mean, there's a famous story back in 1986, the Supreme Court upheld sodomy laws, later overruled itself, and there was the fifth justice, Justice Powell, had a gay clerk, and the clerk was afraid to come out to the justice. And the justice literally said, I've never met anyone like this, and I have trouble even understanding what it means. And it's this tragic, poignant moment in our time. This was in the height of the AIDS epidemic, where the clerk was, you know, scared for his job and the rest of his career because he couldn't tell the justice who he was and who he loved. Now it's very different. I think almost all the justices have had an openly gay or lesbian clerk at some point or another. So I think it's just natural that, as Troy said, as people get to know people who are LGBT, they understand that the stereotypes just aren't true.
It's Cliff Roski, professor at the S.J. Quinney College of Law on the Advisory Board of Equality Utah. Cliff, thanks very much.
Thank you.
It's Troy Williams, executive director of Equality Utah. Thanks to you.
Thank you.
For being with us. Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.